I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together. Have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I think I'm Maggie.
And this is episode number 45. And this is a little bit of an odd episode because this is coming out on a Saturday because our Christmas episode came out on Christmas.
On Christmas, which is
which
Wednesday.
Just happened to be Wednesday. Yeah. And, I mean, you got to have your Christmas episode out on Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, we could have dropped Scrooge, like, Christmas Eve and done this, because this is also kind of a Christmassy movie. So we could have conceivably done it that way, but I like the way we did it. Because, yeah. You know, A Christmas Carol should show up on Christmas. We also hope you go and listen to our take on four different Christmas carols and find out what we thought and who's the better. And
it was a lot of fun talking about those four Christmas movies.
Yeah, and Christmas movies in general.
And some other, yeah, and Christmas movies in general. And
so we hope that you enjoyed it if you listened to it. And if you haven't, check it out. It's a good one. And 'tis the season.
So we watched Little Women.
Yes.
From 2019.
Yes.
Directed by Greta Gerwig.
Mm-hmm.
Directed Barbie, which was our first episode.
Yes, it was.
And Lady Bird, which
broke
was
me.
A later episode. I can't remember the number.
Lady Bird broke me and Barbie broke me.
Yes.
And this one devastated me.
I said this to you on the couch right after Little Women finished.
I could not remember anything from that moment. I was crying so hard that I think I left my body at one point.
This was I really enjoyed this movie. I'm not going to say my stars yet, but I can say that I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really fun...
This is also, just really quickly, sorry to interrupt, but this is the first movie that Caveman and I haven't seen.
That's true.
Together. Like, since Whiplash?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither one of us had seen Little Women.
Yes.
And neither one of us had seen Whiplash.
Yeah.
These are the only two movies that neither of us had seen so far. There's a couple more on the list.
There are a couple more on the list that we haven't
seen. Neither of us have seen.
But this, well, yeah.
Many,
this
many
one of the
more that
ones.
Maggie hasn't seen.
So many. But, you know, one of us is a serious movie fan, and the other one is a action comedy romance movie fan. So I tend to skip movies that I think are going to devastate me.
I'm actually surprised you hadn't watched this movie.
I'm not going to say I didn't care, but I didn't really care. I remember...
Especially after Barbie came out, and you being you would have been like, what else has Greta Gerwig done?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking that so much, though, after Barbie came
out. This is such a very... In the realm of, like, Pride and Prejudice,
yes.
Of just...
You know, it is a period piece. That's the word you were looking for.
Yeah, well...
And
well,
it's
not just
a romance.
Period piece.
And it's also got strong feminist values.
But it takes place in times when...
Yeah.
Women and their position in society was...
Fucked.
Mainly just to be the wife.
Honey, that's every...
And childbirth. I know, but...
That's every era up until this one, and even this one
isn't
great for us.
But to have these two movies, which both involve sisters...
Yes.
Getting one by one married off to some guy...
Yes.
That's what I was looking
at. Okay,
so here's... Very similar in that respect.
Here's the tea, honey. I'm going to go ahead and spill it, because... I'm a little floaty right now, and if we're getting into it this early, then we're getting into it this early. I never cared because I never cared. And I remember watching Little Women, the one from 94, I think, with Winona Ryder. I watched it with some girlfriends when I was like a late kid, early tween, if that makes sense. And... I didn't care then. Like, it did not spark my interest at that age for whatever reason. Maybe it's because I was a big tomboy. You know, maybe because it just... There's something about... And also, there's something about the Regency era of England that is much more romantic than, like, the 1820s America. it is prettier to look at. It is easier to slip into the romance and the like fantasy of it all. Right? Because I don't watch Pride and Prejudice and think about the realistic, like, world as it was then. I look at the pretty dresses and the pretty colors and I think, romance! It's a fantasy romance.
Sure, and that makes sense. Because Pride and Prejudice era. Pride and Prejudice is very much like, these are very wealthy, mostly...
Well, yeah, I mean, the Bennets are...
The Bennets are not, like, super wealthy, super rich or anything.
They're a little quirky.
Little Women really showed you and dealt with what... being poor in 1800s Massachusetts was like after the war.
I don't care as much about that time period of American history and actual history because it was all fucked and it was all really Bummerville. And, you know, like when I romanticize the 1800s, I'm thinking about the Wild West. I'm thinking about, like, the really fancy fucking rich assholes in New York who I actually don't even like that much because I'm like, all of you people suck. You're all so hoity-toity and you all suck. Like, so it's not even that. Like, I don't romanticize the 1800s the way that I do, you know, the Regency era of England, right? Especially with Bridgerton, with Pride and Prejudice, with Sense and Sensibility. I personally prefer those stories. And so... I've never read Little Women. I saw the original. Well, not the original, because there have been 1,000 versions of this film or in this story. But I saw the one with Winona Ryder when I was a kid. I didn't care then. I didn't really care now. And although I looked at that cast and I was like, God damn that cast. Like, holy shit, this fucking cast looks great. I just didn't really care. And now I've seen it. And it's... an incredible film, but it broke me in a way that I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. Or it, like, and I said that about Interstellar, and I've come around on Interstellar pretty hard, so it might need to be a couple years before I sit down and rewatch this movie and really, like, let it sink in. Because, and you can attest to this, my love, I cried so hard during this movie, my soul left my body. And I was hungover with emotion the next day. I was also hungover on cider. But it was much more of the emotion. Yeah, have you ever cried so hard that your whole face aches for like 12 to 16 hours? That's what it was. So, yeah. Here we are.
Here we are.
We haven't even gotten into like the specifics of it. But you asked, so this is your fault.
Well, let's talk about some of the other stuff.
This that fucking guest! Well, oh my god. Yeah, we'll get to them, but I'm so excited to talk about
it. Let's start at the very top.
Yeah.
Little Women was written by Louisa May Alcott.
Originally.
Yes, she wrote the book. It was published in 2 volumes. They came out in 1868 and then 1869. So you had to wait a year for that second half.
I mean,
it's the Harry Potter
of they weren't
the 1800s.
Yeah, they weren't the first people to ever do it like that. I'm sure there were absolutely some Little Women fangirls out there that like finished it and just started screaming like, I need to know.
Well, I think of the publisher's daughters that came up to him as like, what is this story and where are the rest of the chapters? I could see them being the ones that
hilarious really TikTok. Wanted my brain went somewhere. There's this hilarious TikTok, and I wish I knew who the artist was, but it is essentially 2 Regency era girls reading Pride and Prejudice for the first time and getting to the point where Darcy proposes to Elizabeth and she turns him down, and they're just like reading this out loud to each other, screaming about it the way that like Jesse and I do about like Chris Evans or, you know, Adam Driver. And it's so funny because it's like there's always been nerds. If there were fans of something, there were the fans that were like obsessive like us. And I would like to think that, yeah, when, you know, out there back then, some teenage girl or young 20-something finished the first half of this book and was just like, oh, my God, desperate to talk to her friends about it.
Did you read chapter 6 yet?
Oh, my God. Did you see? Like, did you see who Laurie ended up with?
So this is loosely based on the lives of the author and her three sisters. It is classified as an autobiographical or semi-autobiographical novel. Immediate commercial and critical success. Readers were eager for more about the characters, and there are sequels. The Good Wives, I think, is the direct sequel. Little Men and Joe's Boys are also, I guess, part 3 and 4. Obviously,
I guess it would be interesting to know where it goes from there, yeah. But I kind of would want to know more about the Saoirse Ronan version of Joe and not the actual version. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I want to see where this world continues.
Greta Gerwig also wrote Little Women, the screenplay, of course, and she's also known for writing. Obviously, she wrote Barbie and Lady Bird, but she also wrote Frances Ha, which we have talked about before, and I was a little surprised when I saw one of her future writing projects, obviously not directing, but I had no idea that Greta Gerwig is the screenwriter behind Disney's Snow White.
Wait, what?
The future movie that's coming out where the trailers look completely, ooh, like trash.
Yeah, that looks terrible. She wrote it?
She wrote the screenplay.
Well, I mean, the last trailer that I saw was very, like, you know, feminist take on Snow White, where Snow White's not the victim. She's, you know, her own hero, which is totally fine. Like, I don't mind retellings of that personally as a woman. I don't mind retellings like that where they, like, twist it on their heads. I don't think it's super necessary, because I'd rather they just create new stories where badass women kick ass and are victim, but in fact the hero. Like, I don't need to see Snow White be her own hero, if that makes sense.
Which she kind of, I mean, Kristen Stewart already did something very similar to that.
And it's not super necessary to retake these old stories that were created in a time when that was the reality for women. It's like if somebody, I don't know, made everybody in Little Women lesbians or something, which there is some pretty strong evidence that Joe is a super lesbo. I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, these old classic fairy tales can just also be old classic fairy tales that are problematic. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think that Snow White looks good, but it's not because of the script.
Yeah, we don't know what the script is.
We don't know what the story is. The story could be pretty decent, but, like, it doesn't look good. What they did with the dwarves is, frankly, criminal. Like, they just should have had little people actors instead of what the fuck are those Uncanny Valley horrible things. We didn't need that. We didn't need photorealistic dwarves.
Pretty terrible.
You could have just given us, like, anyway. Yeah.
Alexander Desplat was the composer of Little Women.
Motherfucker.
Always love his stuff. We've talked about him before as well. 210 projects under his belt. Grand Budapest Hotel being one of them, which is why we talked about it, because he won the Oscar for that. So, Maggie, I don't know if you're aware, but next year, first we got Maggie Gyllenhaal is doing, has directed a movie called The Bride with Christian Bale and Jesse Buckley. I don't know if you have seen set photos of Christian Bale as Frankenstein.
Yes. Wow. And I had to really roll back the Rolodex in my head.
And Jesse Buckley is playing the Bride of Frankenstein. But I only bring that up because they're making another Frankenstein movie coming out next year as well. It's directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, yeah. Oscar Isaac's in that one.
And Oscar Isaac is Victor Von, or Victor Frankenstein.
And his hair and mutton chops are a choice. But I am so fucking excited for that. Aren't you excited for that?
I'm excited for both.
I mean, the Christian Bale one. Who's directing the Christian Bale one? Do we know?
The Christian Bale one's directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh, okay.
And Guillermo del Toro's doing the one with Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, I'm much more excited for the Guillermo del Toro one.
Jacob Elordi's playing the monster.
We're going to see Frankenstein's dick. But yeah.
And Mia Goth is also in that.
Yeah, right? Like, so, aren't you more excited for that one?
I kind of am, but that's because...
I mean, just for the Guillermo del Toro.
Oscar Isaac, Mia Goth.
Yeah, no, the cast is great. Jacob Elordi. Guillermo del Toro doing Frankenstein. Like, yeah, between that and Oscar Isaac, those are my two main draws.
That being said, I'm still very... I'm looking forward to seeing trailers for both of them. I am excited to see Christian Bale as the monster. And
sorry, I just wanted to show you Oscar Isaac's mutton chops in Frankenstein. Like, that hair is a choice.
He looks like...
It's not the right choice, but it's not the wrong choice. He's dressed
like Hugh Jackman in Van Helsing.
It is a little Van Helsing. I mean, and like, I don't know, because then they...
Which also had Frankenstein in it.
Because, like, then they released, like, Guillermo del Toro actually released this picture, which is more the vibe, right? It's not just a paparazzi of the set photo. It's an actual proper still.
Yeah.
And it looks a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's just Oscar Isaac's ass, which is why it looks better. Hey!
Cinematography was done by York Lasau. He's worked on 60 projects, including High Life with Robert Pattinson, Mia Goth again, and Andre 3000.
It was beautifully shot, this movie. Yes, the cinematography is stunning.
Little Women is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Of course.
It has a 95% from critics.
Hot damn.
And 92% from audiences, which I'm actually a little surprised that audiences liked it that close enough, along with critics.
People love this story. Like, they really love this story. It was really Yeah, and again,
everything was really well done. And
it's a classic
great.
American novel. It's a classic American feminist, you know, slash novel that women love. I mean, it's a coming-of-age story, so I think that's a lot of, like, you know, grandma read it as a kid, so she made mom read it, so mom made the daughter read it sort of thing. Like, it's a generational story. Again, not in my family, so that's why I didn't care.
It was made for $42 million.
That's cheap.
That is cheap.
They couldn't get this cast but for these, that little, again.
These, well, you could choose, like, at the time, Florence Pugh was not really a big name.
Yeah, she wasn't that big. Timothy Chalamet wasn't a big name.
Saoirse Ronan wasn't a big name, really. The biggest actor in this is probably...
Well, Laura Dern, Emma
Laura
Watson.
Laura Dern, Emma Watson, I think would.
Yeah, she's got the. Well, Meryl Streep.
Well, of course, but I don't think Meryl Streep was on the poster.
No, I think that was kind of a.
It was very surprising. Like, I had no idea Meryl Streep was in it.
I mean,
so when she pops up, I'm like, oh, yeah. Meryl Streep.
Going into this, in fact, I too was like, Meryl Streep's in this? Going into it, like back in 2019 when it came out, I knew who Saoirse Ronan was. I didn't really know who Florence Pugh was. Florence Pugh was just starting to drop everywhere, and I wasn't really paying attention to her yet. So, yeah, for me, it was, like, Emma Watson and Saoirse Ronan, and I don't even think I knew who Timothy Chalamet was yet.
Well, he was in Interstellar before this.
Yeah,
but as I mean...
We've talked about this.
Yeah, I mean, this movie came out 5 years after Interstellar, so... Mm-hmm.
Like, I might have been aware of the name in the periphery of my pop culture knowledge, but I didn't know who he was the way I do
I don't
now.
Think we watched movies with him in
specifically
it.
For him.
Right, specifically for him. No, not that early. So in between Interstellar and Little Women, Timothy Chalamet had already done... Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, yeah.
Which is on this list towards the end, I think. And Lady Bird.
So, yeah, I was...
Oh, and The King.
I was aware of him, but it wasn't... He wasn't the draw.
Which, I've said it before, I'll say it again. He's really good in The King. So, it was made for $42 million, and it made, domestically, $108.
We went off on such a tangent, I kind of forgotten how we'd gotten there. It was made for 42. It made 108
domestically.
Domestically, it's not bad.
Another 111.
Yeah.
Internationally.
Damn.
And 9 million on home media.
That's a solid hit of a film.
For a total of 228 million.
Jesus.
So it made over five times its budget.
Yeah. That's insane.
For this little film.
Yeah.
And you can see why. I can see why after Lady Bird. Small indie film got a lot of critical success.
Yeah, but it wasn't a huge box office draw.
Yeah. Little Women critics liked it.
Yeah.
And it made a lot of money.
And it was nominated for things.
And so I can really see why
she got Barbie.
She got Barbie, and yeah. She had a lot of control yeah. on the final product.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't like the studio was stepping in and fighting her and a lot of stuff. They were like, oh, we trust you. Well, you know, Greta Gerwig had to prove herself.
And every director does.
Every director does. And she did it. She's done it solidly up to this point. As a director, she's only done the three, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so.
As a director, yeah.
Banger, banger, banger. Like right out the gate. That's, you know.
Yeah. And you can see why Netflix would hand her
Narnia
yeah. if that's something that she was really passionate. Obviously, she's passionate
about. And it's not just her directing, though. It's also the writing. Like she writes too. That,
her and her husband. Yeah. Except not her husband wasn't in on Little Women.
No.
It won 78 awards, including an Oscar for Best Costume Design.
As well it should. I mean, it wasn't, unfortunately, that year. It wasn't going to get much else.
That was what it won. It was nominated for quite a few. First of all, for Best Costume, it was up against The Irishman, mm-hmm. Jojo Rabbit,
okay,
the first Joker movie, of course, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And it beat them all out.
You know, the only one of those films that I feel like could have gone up against them properly in terms of costumes was Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
None of the costumes from the other ones necessarily stood out
Joker
to me.
Maybe a little bit.
There are moments. Yeah, there are costumes in Joker.
Jojo Rabbit's very period for World War II.
When I think of Jojo Rabbit, I think of those shoes.
Yeah, well.
Fuck. We have to watch that too, and I never wanted to watch that movie again.
Oof.
Another movie that made me cry so hard that my soul detached from my mortal form.
Little Women was nominated for Best Picture, but that year it went to Parasite.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah.
Best Lead Actress, Saoirse Ronan, mm-hmm. was nominated for Best Lead Actress. It went to Renee Zellweger for Judy.
Judy, yeah.
Yep.
No.
And then Best Supporting Actress nomination for Florence Pugh.
Pew, pew.
But that went to Laura Dern, but not for Little Women, but for Marriage Story.
Which Greta Gerwig's husband wrote and directed.
Yes. And
so.
Oscar Isaac, was it?
No, Adam Driver. And I've never seen it because it looked like it was Bummersville.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just looks like they're just screaming at each other the whole movie.
I don't like movies like that.
No, I'll pass.
Yeah.
It's bad enough watching that one with Vince Vaughn and...
Yes, and Jennifer Aniston. The breakup or whatever literally was also just thinking about
that. It was such
that.
An uncomfortable argument, and I know the one with Adam Driver is even more intense, and I'm like, nah.
Yeah, I don't really... Oscar Isaac was in that an incredible miniseries with... Jessica Chastain. You actually see Oscar Isaac's dick on screen at one point. Like, he hangs dong. So I know what it looks like. But... It, too, is about a divorcing couple, and I haven't watched it yet because I'm just like, I don't want to watch a couple. And the other weird thing about the Jennifer Aniston one with Vince Vaughn, it was marketed as a comedy, but it was not a comedy. They were like, oh, these two, they were a real-life couple. Isn't that funny? Boop, 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 boop. But then you're just like, oh, God. It was such an uncomfortable watch.
It was also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. For Greta Gerwig, and that went to Jojo Rabbit, went to Taika Waititi because he wrote that one. And then Alexander Desplat was nominated for Best Score, that went to Hildur, and I can't pronounce the last name from Joker that I've already said I didn't care for because it was very repetitive.
Yep.
And this soundtrack,
this score
was better.
No, it was. But, you know, we've raged against the Joker enough for two people that actually kind of like it.
Randy Newman was also nominated for Marriage Story for composing. Thomas Newman for 1917, which I've already said love that one. And Star Wars Rise of Skywalker by John Williams. I love the music for 1917. And I was saying that I didn't care for Joker's music. But the only standout one that I was curious about was the score for Little Women.
I mean, I bet you if we went back to that Joker episode, you'd be like, yeah, I look forward to watching that eventually. And here we are.
Yeah, and to have an idea of which score I preferred in the end. And that's a little tough. Because I really did enjoy this score.
I really enjoyed this score. I don't know if I could tell you any of the, like, the themes off of it. And I really enjoyed 1917's score, but I kind of can't tell you if I remember any of the music from it.
There's only...
So both of them, I think, in the time, I was like, oh, this is a really good score. But it's not like I then downloaded them and have listened to them the way that I have, like, so many.
I don't listen to scores very much.
I listen to scores a lot. A lot.
1917's score, I know certain scenes and what they sound like, and really like them. But at the same time, I thought the score for Little Women was very well done and rightly deserved that nomination. Let's get into that cast.
Yeah, let's get into that cast. This fucking cast is incredible.
This cast is really good. Saoirse Ronan.
Who, I mean, I've talked about before. I absolutely adore her to no end.
This is the third movie we've watched with her in it.
Yeah.
Grand Budapest Hotel and Lady Bird.
Yeah.
Those are mainly the things I know her from.
Oh, man. She was in this sweet little movie called Brooklyn that I watched. Like, it was one of those things where you wake up really early and can't fall asleep, so you come out to the living room and watch a movie before the family gets up. Yeah, I watched that movie, and it's adorable.
I've never seen Brooklyn. Atonement was one of those movies where I was just like, I don't really want to see that.
I have seen Atonement, and it is a serious bummer of a film, and I don't think I'll ever
watch it. The Lovely Bones is a bit of a bummer of a film.
Again, yeah.
Hannah is a bummer of a film. Hannah's actually really good, but it's
actually Hannah was like a bummer. Like a Scarlet or Black Widow thing, right? Like she was a kid turned assassin turned something, right? Like wasn't she some sort of...
Yeah, she's a 16-year-old kid and her dad taught her how to be an assassin. And I think it came out...
Ooh, she was in City of Ember.
I think Hannah came out... It was during the time, I think, that Hunger Games was also out. So it was really that... Especially bows and arrows and women with bows and arrows. And there were actually a lot of those kind of movies with women and bows and arrows.
Fads.
Sure. We also have Emma Watson.
Who is, frankly, underrated. I think people give her a hard time. You know, like, she wasn't super great in Beauty and the Beast, but she wasn't terrible.
She got
a lot better as Hermione towards the end. You know, she's done some interesting choices, but she is such a breath of fresh air in this movie. Like, her character, Meg, she's like the antithesis of Jo, but there's so much love there, and I just really kind of connected with Meg a lot. While watching this. And I thought that Emma Watson was just stunning in it. Like, she's had some ups and downs, but this movie she's fucking great in.
Other than Harry Potter, the only other movie I've seen her in was Noah and Beauty and the Beast. And I'm pretty sure I saw The Circle with Tom Hanks.
Oh, I definitely didn't.
I've always wanted to see The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I've heard really good things about that.
Same, and I just haven't.
And then also she's gone off and she's done so much for charity, and she doesn't really Broadway. Act anymore because she's off doing humanitarian stuff. So, like, I think we'll always all adore Emma Watson. She was in This Is the End. I think she was really funny in that.
Then we've got Florence Pugh.
Pew pew! Yeah.
Florence Pugh, comma, pew pew.
Or Florence pew pew!
This is the... Also the third movie we've seen her in?
Midsommar, Dune. Technically she's not in Dune.
Oh, shit. She's not in the Dune for the movie, but she's in Dune 2.
Yeah, which we did watch.
Midsommar, Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer! Yeah, I forgot about her in Oppenheimer.
Dune 2. She's also in two more upcoming movies that we're doing. One being Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
She's in Puss in Boots?
She is. And as a main character, too.
Oh.
And The Boy and the Heron. So we're going to hear... We've gotten some live-action acting from her in three movies, and we're going to see her in two animated films.
So I pulled up her IMDb. And you know how IMDb has the known fours for Florence or for all the different actors?
Oh, like this you scroll down, four?
And it's her top four.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of any of these. And if you look at the dates, they're all super early. So this is her. This is Florence Pugh's known four.
How like, are these four? To her be known fair, fours?
You know, Saoirse Ronan's is like Hannah, Brooklyn, Lovely Bones, Atonement. Yeah. Emma Watson's is like Beauty and the Beast, Harry Potter, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Right. Yeah. So the movies you know them from. Here are Florence Pugh's: The Falling from 2014.
Yeah.
Marcella from 2016.
A TV show.
Yes. Lady Macbeth in 2016 and The Commuter in 2018. Where, how are these the ones? These are
not the movies that she's known for at all.
Dune, Midsommar,
yeah.
Oppenheimer, fucking this one.
Midsommar, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Who hasn't been updating Florence Pugh's IMDb?
Every once in a while, I think it's just kind of like a glitch because I've seen this before where I'll like go to somebody big's known for, you know, like Paige, I mean, and I go to their known for, and I'm like, the fuck are
I think
movies?
More people know her probably from the Black Widow movie more than
oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%
any of these, any Black of this Widow. Other stuff.
Oh, yeah. We Live in Time was huge.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, anyways, I had to point that out because that is very, very funny.
Eliza Scanlon played Beth.
Yes. I didn't recognize her from a lot, but she did a really lovely job as Beth.
Sharp Objects is a TV series with...
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
Yeah.
But I've never watched it, but... I've seen, you know, there have always been TV spots and mm-hmm. trailers for that. And that's really the only thing that I...
She was also in The Devil All the Time, which is a Netflix movie that I haven't seen, which is shocking considering that the cast consists of Tom Holland, Sebastian Stan, Bill Skarsgård, Robert Pattinson.
Jeez.
Who else is in this one?
I've heard of this movie, but yeah. I have not seen
Jason
it.
Jason Clarke, ooh, like Haley him. Bennett. Like, this is a solid cast of a film, and I've never watched it. So I think you and I need to watch this film. And it's, like, set in the South. Oh, Harry Melling, who I think is Dursley, who got hot. Like, yeah, this is a solid cast. And I've never sat down to watch this movie.
Next, we have Laura Dern.
Who I will love forever and ever and ever and ever.
I loved her character as Marmee March.
Oh, she's just such a sweet mom.
Yeah, she is.
She's just doing her best. And she's got a big heart. And she's trying to teach her kids to be socially conscious. And you know, like, she helps people, even at sometimes her own detriment. And I really connected with that moment where her and Joe are having the conversation about being angry all the time. Because I know so many women, myself included, who are just like, just full on, you know, Hulk in the first Avengers.
I'm always angry.
I'm always angry. Like, we're always angry all the time about so much. But we just have to swallow it down. Laura Dern is perfection. She's beautiful. I love her.
Yeah.
She, you know, she's so, so good in this movie.
Timothy Chalamet played Laurie. Yeah, who's he again?
Yeah, what is he doing?
This is like the 20th movie we've watched him with.
Like, he somehow is appearing more than Matt Damon these days. Like, he's just in every...
Well, in just our podcast alone, no, I think we've talked about Timothy Chalamet almost as much as we've talked about... Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe. He was in Dune. He was in...
Interstellar.
He was in... Wait, has it just been Dune and Interstellar?
No.
No, there was another one.
No.
But yeah, like, he's the it guy now, right? He's raised through the ranks.
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, yeah. He's, you know, he's paid his dues, and he's fucking great. It's not that he's like, it's not like whoever played the werewolf in the Twilight movies, Tyler Lautner, who they, you know, how Hollywood was desperately trying to make him the next thing, or that cardboard cutout from Avatar, Sam, what's his face, you know, like, or that cardboard cutout from John Carter, like all of these different like actors that were supposed to be the new, they were hot and they're supposed to be the new it thing and they're the next up and coming, blah, 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 blah. And they all kind of fizzled out because they weren't good actors.
Yeah.
And they weren't taking the right roles. And Chalamet has routinely killed it.
Yeah.
He's good in everything.
Even though I didn't really like Wonka overall.
No, it was okay movie.
I thought he was fine.
She's fantastic in it.
I'm looking forward to watching A Complete Unknown.
Yeah, me too. I love Bob Dylan so much.
And we're going to be watching him again in the upcoming episode for Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, this kid has proven himself to be an incredible actor who will stand the test of time. And good for him. You know, I wish he wasn't dating one of the Kardashian clan? Absolutely. But that is the extent to which I care about him outside of his movies.
He'll learn his lesson eventually.
Oh, God, I hope so. Because if he gets that girl knocked up and they have to stay together for some reason or another, like, oh, you poor son of a bitch. Run. Run, Chalamet. Run for the hills.
Next, we have Tracy Letts, mm-hmm. who plays Mr. Dashwood, the publisher.
Yeah.
Who
he was the dad.
He was the dad in Lady Bird.
Yeah, and he was, you know, spectacular in that movie and annoyingly fun in this one. Although I didn't like his misogynist takes as the character, I thought that he played that character really well, and he's having fun with it.
He is, and I mean, it's
I know it was the world at that
1860s,
time. 1860s. Like, I get it.
The 70s.
It was a fucking bummer, but just like with fucking,
he was telling her the truth of what sells. Yeah.
And just like a Guy Pearce Christmas Carol, I don't need to know about the realities of that time. Like, let me live in the fantasy a little bit. Our world is a dumpster fire. I'm very aware of it.
Yeah, but when you're doing period pieces.
Yeah, and then there are Pride and Prejudice is a period piece that
is going to ignore all the bummers.
Kind of a bit of a fantasy, yeah. Frankly, I want to kind of ignore some of the bummers from time to time to help me ignore my own bummers.
It's not going to happen.
No, that is escapism.
Bob Odenkirk is in this movie.
I, first of all, shocked that he was in it. He plays the dad. He's barely there. Bob Odenkirk is delightfully handsome. But more than anything, that guy's got some pipes on him that I did not expect. I was watching a Glenn Hansard concert from New York. It was something I paid like $15 to through a website, and I got to watch this concert live streamed from New York, and it was incredible, right? Glenn Hansard is my favorite artist of all time. He's an Irish singer-songwriter. I absolutely love him. He brought out a bunch of people. It was like 2 hours of incredible music, but he brought out Bob Odenkirk to sing one of his songs, The Philanderer, and this is a song that I've always kind of skipped on the album because it's not my favorite, right? Like, I think I listened to it like once and I didn't really get into it. So I just kind of always skipped it. But after listening to Bob Odenkirk sing it, I was like, Jesus Christ, wait, I've got to go back to this song. So sexy. So well done. It's a delight. And it's one of those silly things that, like, you know, I got to experience and the people who watched the live stream and the people in the audience, but like nobody knows that Bob Odenkirk's got some fucking pipes on him.
Louis Garrel, who plays Friedrich.
Yes. Did you look at his IMDb?
I just realized who he is.
Yes.
He was the other guy in The Dreamers.
Folks, if you haven't seen The Dreamers, it is a very highly sexual film.
I'm sweating just thinking about it.
About a pair of siblings who form this throuple with Louis Garrel. Louis Garrel.
No, he's
the brother. Sorry.
He is the brother.
Yeah, he's the brother.
Ava Green form a relationship with Michael Pitt.
Yes, that's it. This movie is hot in a way that I cannot describe. Ava Green, who's one of my like forever celebrity like hall passes. Kate Vance too.
Same.
We are firmly on the like, if Ava Green knocked on our door, we'd just be like, together or separate, either way we're okay with it. Like,
pretty much.
Yeah, like I would not care. And I would just want to watch. She is so beautiful. And this movie is, I mean, oh my, there's a moment with the a depiction of the Venus de Mayo that I can't talk about.
Essentially, she has black gloves on to make herself look armless.
And she's got the thing, and it's a whole thing, and it's so hot.
Anyway, Chris Cooper.
I love me some Chris Cooper. Chris Cooper so goddamn much, and it's so nice seeing him play the Donald Sutherland role of the the kind uncle. When, as soon as I saw that it was Chris Cooper, and not having known much about this movie, I was like, oh, the uncle's gonna be a dick. But he wasn't. He was so sweet.
He was so sweet.
And he was so kind. Oh, man. And he just looked like he was having so much fun playing that role of the wise patriarch. And, you know what? Good for him. He's entering his Donald Sutherland, like, happy era. And
I mean, after so long of seeing him play assholes.
Yeah.
Especially in things like American Beauty.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even in the Muppets. we're happy that he gets to play a nice old man that
he did a misses great job.
You know, misses his daughter, dead wife or dead daughter. Yeah, yeah, his daughter died, and sweet man. Meryl Streep,
yeah, finally,
who I had no idea was in this movie either.
Playing Aunt March.
Aunt March.
What do you say about Meryl Streep that hasn't been said? She's amazing. She's fucking Meryl Streep.
Win more Oscars. She's been nominated more than any other. She's actor in couple, Hollywood,
right?
She has one,
but she's Meryl fucking Streep. She is
I know.
Eternal, and when she one day passes on, she will still be Meryl Streep. She will be a constellation in the sky.
Meryl Streep has almost won 50% of the awards she was nominated for.
Jesus,
she has been nominated for 399 awards, and has won 186 of them, which includes three Oscars. That
Meryl fucking Streep. She will one day be a constellation in the night sky. They'll be like, there's Big Dipper, and there's Aries, there's Meryl Streep. Little Women, a story about four women growing up in a time when it wasn't particularly great to be a woman, each with their own sensibilities, their own talents, their own wants, their own needs. And, you know, of course, Jo is the kind of the anti-hero slash anti, I guess, stereotypical woman, right? You know, she's out there to create a life for herself. Amy is to an extent as well. You know, Meg wants to find a husband and settle down and have a family. And Beth just wants to play the piano, but she's going to die anyways. So, you know. Hi, Beth. Bye, Beth. There's always got to be a sickly one.
Poor Beth.
And yeah, it's just about their lives and their loves and the people that are in love with them, the people they're in love with, and it's great. I admittedly, you know, I've already talked a bit about how I didn't care, but this story really did affect me in a wonderful way about childhood, you know, the loss of your childhood as you have to grow up, what it means to be a woman even today, especially what it meant to be one back then. It broke me over the idea of sisters because I am the sister. I do not have sisters. And, you know, so that instant friendship that you would have gotten. I wish I had a sister.
I was thinking about what if your brothers were both girls.
Oh, God.
And how that how that dynamic with your parents are still your parents.
We would have killed everyone.
That would have been
something. Well, I mean, like, you know, if your brother had been a sister, also would have been really interesting.
It would have been interesting, but specifically your family with your parents raising three daughters.
Yeah.
Would have been, I think your dad would have still done a lot of same things.
Like, oh, he absolutely would have been. I think
you're girls doesn't mean you're not going to help me roof this house.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever,
you know,
it was. I think he would treat you just the same way he treated
us. Yeah.
Yes. But,
and well, but here's
the dynamic between you and these two other sisters now, who I think your relationship would have been very different with sisters rather than brothers.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean,
I think in any situation, no matter who your parents are, I just think the dynamic would have been really crazy.
Gender bending my family now, the oldest would be at the moment like a boss bitch CEO who wears, you know, Louis Vuitton's, you know, heels every single day of her life, and was also once a model, and, you know, has a quite an impressive life, you know, the middle child, butch lesbian, like 1000% would have been super butch lesbian.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And I would like to think I would be the same, but I don't know what I would be.
It's hard because you were raised in a household with these three men.
Yeah.
Or a man and these boys.
Yeah, these three male energies.
Male energies that I think really...
everything.
Yeah.
And I had to make it or break it. And that's why I am. I had to adapt. You adapted
to the situation.
And that is why the way that I am. But it's also why, you know, like, they don't see that they're the monster that they create, that I'm the monster they created. Right?
Right.
And so... when I fight them on shit now as an adult, and they're just like, God, why can't you just like let it go or whatever? It's like, no.
Why can't you be this other way I want you to be?
And exactly. Like,
because you raised me. You raised me to yeah. be
I learned it this. From watching you, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
All of that. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, as a girl who grew up with brothers, I mourn not having sisters. In a way that is very special because of movies like this and like Pride and Prejudice and other films where you see, or like Charmed or whatever, where you see that sisterly camaraderie. You know, there are the fights, there's the anger, there's the psychoticness of two women, three women, a bunch of women together. You know, like there's all of that, but there's the camaraderie and the friendship that I saw in my friends with sisters and that, you know, I have with my friends. Jessie is my sister. You know, not through blood, but through soul and every other way. She is my sister, but we didn't grow up together in that way. Like, so a part of me as a girl without sisters, I mourn that. And things like this hit me a little bit harder because you're right. How would life in that multiverse, you know, world out there where the three kids in my family are all girls? What's that like? I would like to know for, you know, better or for worse, or maybe the possibility of the end of the world, because I don't think we could handle it. Our own kids, you know, there's essentially one of each. So it's a weird thing to be a girl who wishes that she had sisters, because I think that girls who have sisters are like, oh boy, have I got stories to tell you. But you see stories like this, and it's really wonderful. I loved their dynamic. They had incredible chemistry, these four actresses, very much in the same way that, you know, the five girls from Pride and Prejudice do. These four women absolutely could be sisters. I loved their different agencies. I felt the story through them more in a way than I thought that I was going to.
Yeah, I really liked seeing these characters be with each other, bond over things, make fun of each other.
Destroy each other's things.
Right, yeah. Like, brutally destroy somebody else's property.
Which is a very sibling thing
do. In the moment, I am so fucking angry at what you just did. I am going to ruin something that you love. But then...
That is a unique sibling punishment.
But then once that sibling sees the reaction of the other sibling, and then especially once a parent is involved... The sibling that caused all the drama in the first place is, like, Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Gonna be like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Epic fights my brothers and I had when my parents weren't around.
My imagination does not do it justice.
But since you know me and my brothers, the fights my brothers and I had were insane. To the point where when we tell our parents about them now, they're like, what the fuck, really? Like, how do we not know? And I'd be like, I don't know. I told you guys you did nothing. But anyways. But there was also love there, you know? And for these four sisters especially, there was love there. Their mom was doing their best. Their dad was off to war, you know? He was coming back from the Civil War. And apparently there's this whole thing about having lost the family fortune due to fraud or scam or something. But I don't really care. But, you know, like, the parents have their own thing that they're going through. And all these women are coming to age where they should marry off. And you know, we've had countless stories about women needing to marry a rich husband in order to be comfortable, to succeed, to get out of a bad situation. Yeah, it sucks that so much of our famous historical feminist art still centers around the idea that we needed a man to save us.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that road. Well, the road I do want to go down is talking about Laurie and Joe's relationship.
Laurie and Joe.
Timothy Chalamet, Saoirse Ronan. They're best friends.
Yeah.
Clearly, it's an unrequited love sort of thing. He is desperate for her.
He's desperate for any woman who would give it to him. Because
Look, he's a big flirt, but he wants Joe more than anything.
I mean, the only sister he didn't hit on was Beth.
Yeah. But there's being a flirt, which he clearly is.
Yeah.
But I think that he still knows that Joe is his soulmate. And Joe's the one that he wants to be with because he loves her the most.
Yeah.
It's not just because he's a flirt. It's not just because he wants a wife.
I wish there was more.
He wants Joe because Joe's his best friend and he wants to have fun with her.
I wish there was more time. Like, it was a lengthy movie.
Yeah, there's a lot to fit in. And they did kind of bounce back and forth between timelines.
We've watched a few movies now that bounce back and forth between timelines, and this one was a little hard to keep track of. It did help that Joe's hair length changed.
There was also color grading. I mean, there were seasons.
There were seasons, yes.
For me, the part that was the most jarring in terms of the bounce back was when Beth dies. And then the next scene is Meg's wedding, and she's there, and she's alive, and she's vibrant. Oh my god,
we just saw this person die. Having just seen her
die, and then seeing that.
It was jarring. It
fucking hurt.
It was jarring.
It hurt.
Yeah.
But anyways, like, it would have been nice, right, to see more of Laurie and Joe together. And of course, Timothy Chalamet and Saoirse Ronan have chemistry on par with, like, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, and, you know, fucking George Clooney and Brad Pitt, and just chemistry that is Hollywood's so
biggest couple right there,
palpable. And it's, you know, it's kind of based on friendship. It's even like, it's even as good, if not better, than Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya.
Yeah.
Because those two have insane chemistry, but.
I,
you know, it, Saoirse Ronan and Timothy Chalamet are meant to be. They're as good as David Tennant and Catherine Tate.
So what I was going to say was, I wish there was more time in between the moment that that Joe turned down Timothy Chalamet and Florence Pugh and Timothy Chalamet got together.
Yeah.
It happened, so the turnaround was a little too quick. Like, he's professing his undying love and devotion to Joe, and chooses Amy. Well, he didn't. He want, like, I understand.
He talks Amy into marriage, I think, to stay close to Joe.
You think that was his intention?
Maybe, this movie, I can't say about, like, the book or the other film. Christian Bale plays Laurie in the Winona Ryder version.
Oh.
That by the way, that is a solid cast.
I might have to watch that sometime. Because
I might have to watch it with you.
I like
you.
The idea of Winona Ryder and Christian Bale now.
Yeah.
Especially in their younger
years.
And
Gabriel Byrne's in it. Gabriel Byrne plays
And you were Friedrich. Right when I looked it up, 94.
Yeah. I think in this version, I think that Laurie wants to stay close to the Marches. And I think that's why he tries. I think that he does genuinely, in his own way, love Amy. She's beautiful. She's from a family that she loves. They grew up together. But I wouldn't be surprised if this version of Laurie was like, I'm going to marry her sister to stay closer. It's like Angelica, you know, being excited that Eliza's marrying Hamilton so that his eyes will stay in her life. Mm. It's. You can't have the person that you love, but you're not going to let them go. So you're going to get into that family somehow. That's in its own right a particular set of agony and love and pain, but it's a choice that people make. And, you know, I don't think that Laurie and Amy are necessarily going to be unhappy with each other. I think that, you know, because Amy even says in that really wonderful speech about what marriage is and how it's a economic proposition for women.
Yeah.
I think she says that we have a choice in those that we love. Right. And I think that for Lori and Amy, it's not a marriage of convenience. It is a marriage of a familiar love almost that will then become a very good romantic love.
Sure.
And of course, I don't know how the story goes, but I'm just basing it off of like this version of these characters. And it is sad. Yeah, right. Like you want Joe and Lori to be together because Lori is the perfect person for her. But she don't need no man, right? Like she doesn't need Frederick. She doesn't need Lori. She needs herself. She is, you know, Rachel Bloom from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She is Elsa from Frozen. Like, she's her own hero. She don't need no man. She kind of has to have one, which is what the publisher says. So, but she kind of doesn't really end up with one, though. That's the other thing. It's like, Frederick's around, but it's not as important to her as, like, the school that she creates for all those kids, her books, her writing. It is a part of her life, but it's not the main part.
I think it was Joe that said, if I was a girl in a book, this would all be easy.
Yeah. Well, same girl. Fucking same. You know, apparently Louisa May Alcott based the story kind of off, you know, like, again, yeah, autobiographical. You know, a lot of our best female classic authors, you know, like Jane Austen's, our Sylvia Plath's, our Louisa May Alcott's, they really were the women that were out there going like, no, I don't side with these societal norms. You know, they not only did they help kind of pave the way for the eventual rights that I have, right, through their own wants and needs and through their art. You know, they inspired women who went out there and went, fuck this. I don't want to do this. You know, and that's pretty cool, too. I still prefer the fantasy of it all. And yeah, I like the romanticism of it all. I love stories about love. I love stories about people falling in love. I am very lucky in that I fell in love with this dumb boy that I was friends with that was stupid and cute and liked the same shit as me. And I will never have to fall in love again because he's my one and only, right? But I still liked the feeling of falling in love so much that I seek it out in my artwork, right? In the art that I like. And I do stay on the happier side of things because I don't like bummers, man. Like, I have to be in the mood for a bummer. And this movie, although beautiful, is a bummer. I mean, it isn't. It ends hopefully, but fucking Beth dying
has some hope in, yeah.
And then just the way that this movie made me cry. So maybe it's not a bummer so much as it's just like, I don't need to cry that hard right now. I've cried too much lately. I genuinely have cried more than the month of December than I have in a very long time. And it's starting to be painful and not a release, but just a, oh God, it's happening again.
And it doesn't help watching all these very
Christmas movies. Taylor Swift, Inside the end Out. Of the Eras tour, Inside Out, this fucking movie, Endgame, and then just like normal everyday stuff like Christmas stress, family stress, work stress, like all of the other stuff that normally makes me cry when nobody's watching. And then like on top of my entertainment, I kind of can't take it anymore. I think that's the reason why I haven't been pushing for us to finish Ghosts, because I'm not ready for that.
That's going to be a cry.
That's going to be a cry, and I just can't. I don't have it in me right now. Like, it's in there, but it's tapping from it. It's pouring from an empty cup. Like, ultimately, that's my thoughts on this movie, is that I really loved it, but I can't endure it again for a while. And it's different from the Lady Bird cry, because the Lady Bird cry for me was more real, right? It was more of like my inner child crying about being a teenager at that time, the way that I was, the people that I knew, the emotions I had for the wrong people, like all of that, right? Like it tapped into a well of like, I've lived that. This was just a cry of like, it's so beautiful I can't take it. And it's so sad, but it's so beautiful. And I just can't take it. And God damn it. Now I'm a woman angry about how they were treated. So one more pile of sticks to throw on my anger fire. I just can't do it again, is what I'm trying to say. So well done, Greta Gerwig, but also go fuck yourself, lady.
So Maggie, what would you give Little Women out of 5 stars?
Like, I think that the emotional side of me wants to scream 5 stars into this microphone. I think the movie fan in me is like, a solid 4. So I'm going to merge those two into a 4.5. It is beautifully well done. It is acted, set design, cinematography, costumes, makeup, hair, all of it. Just top tier, beautiful across the board.
Yeah.
This story is pretty decent. Yeah, it's a great story. It's been told again and again.
It's one of those classics.
It's a classic for a reason. You know, so, and again, it's not a story that I don't associate or romanticize that time period the way I do other time periods. So that's why I'm like, oh, okay, so it's kind of a 4. But it also, like, it wounded me to my core, which was unnecessary, but I can't dock it for that. So 4.5. What about you, my love?
I, too, am saying 4.5. It is a solidly made, written, directed film. The soundtrack is spot on.
Yeah.
I also am really glad that they didn't...
I mean, this was slightly before that fad of using anachronistic songs in a period piece, because that's very common now. It's a big Bridgerton thing. It's a lot of, like, the kind of, like, modern, like, feminist takes on classic times, right? Yeah. Is they use anachronistic songs, either the regular version or some like fucking cello version, right? And I'm not angry at that, but I'm glad that that's not a fad that this movie keeps it timeless.
Yeah.
This movie is timeless.
There was something I wanted to say about the early production of Little Women. In October 2013, it was announced that a new film adaptation of the novel Little Women by Louisa May Alcott was in development at Sony Pictures, with Olivia Milch writing the screenplay and Robin Swickord and Denise Dinovi serving as producers. 2 years later, Amy Pascal joined as producer on the new adaptation, with Sarah Polley hired to write the script and potentially direct. Ultimately, Polly's involvement never went beyond initial discussions. In August 2016, so now 3 years after the initial talks about this becoming a movie, Greta Gerwig was hired to write the screenplay. In June 2018, so now we're 5 years after Sony had greenlit the development of this film, Gerwig was announced as the film's director in addition to being its screenwriter. She had heard about Sony's plans to adapt the book in 2015 and urged her agent to get her in touch with the studio, concerning that while she was not on anybody's list to direct this film, it was something that she aspired to do, citing how the book had inspired her to become a writer and director. Pascal described Gerwig's pitch as the ambition and dreams that you have as a girl, and how they get stomped out of you as you grow up. Yeah, when I saw that, that was really something to read from Greta Gerwig. And just an idea like this just starts with the producers just saying, hey, we should make this.
Yeah.
Or we should remake this story. And then it's evolving.
It's people who love the story and want to put it out there because it's important to them.
Yeah.
And it falling in, it took a while, obviously, but I would like to think that each set of hands that it fell into cared enough about it to want to continue it forward and to, you know, make a newer version of it. What was said about girlhood is beautiful. Girlhood is a beautiful, magical thing. We could do anything because we have the fire inside of us to do it. We have the fire and the passion and the want to do whatever. whatever we truly desire to go out into the world and be a blazing star, and then we're squashed down repeatedly again and again, and our fires are put out, and we're told that we're not good enough, we're not strong enough, we're not enough, and that sucks. And the story is about a woman who said, fuck that, I'm still going to go out and do it. And then it was created by women who have experienced all sorts of bullshit and said, fuck that, I'm going to do what I want. And it got us to this point. And that's kind of the true wonder of this film, is and of Barbie, and kind of what Greta Gerwig is doing as a whole, is that she's shown us the stories about women who have been told time and time and time and time and time again no, and fucking did it anyways. Because that's what we are. We are determined, and we're tenacious, and we're pissed off, and we're full of hope. And that's what it means to be a girl.
So, Maggie.
Yes, caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it.
You've been in this business long as I have. You develop a nose for hanky-panky.
Did you pick fucking that Zack Snyder film to do...
Zack Snyder?
Yeah. Not Whiplash. What movie is that from?
It's not Zack Snyder, that's for sure.
Wait. Play it again.
You've been in this business long as I have. You develop a nose for hanky-panky.
Oh, no, it was that weird Matt Damon movie he did about suburbia, or suburban something, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, and he plays some sort of weird, like...
Suburbicon?
Yes.
Directed by George Clooney, starring Matt Damon.
I never saw it because I heard Julianne it wasn't Moore. Good. Did you ever see it?
I did.
And?
Yeah.
I heard it wasn't worth it. And as much as I love Oscar Isaac, I'd rather just watch his scenes on YouTube than watch an entire movie... you know, around him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I love you, Oscar. I was like, I truly do. But there are some movies that I'm just... Well, I mean, same with any of my celebrity loves. Like, there's plenty of Sebastian Stan movies that I'm like, probably not. In fact, The Apprentice, even though he's getting rave reviews for The Apprentice... I'm really not going to watch that one.
I'll watch it. I'll let you know.
I am very curious about a Different Man, or what that other one.
Absolutely.
I definitely want to see that. Anyways, yeah. Oscar Isaac, you're beautiful. I love you. Should you have been in this movie?
Yes, Maggie. Question number one. Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made Little Women a better film?
No, it wouldn't, because... it's a movie about women, not the most perfect man to ever exist on this planet.
True that.
So, no. It wouldn't have... I mean, I would have been happy to see him, but he didn't need to be there. So
question number two.
Yeah.
Which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
I mean, I guess there is a argument to, like he could have been Laurie when he was younger. Right? Like, he could have played that character, maybe not in this film, but I could see, like, a younger version of Oscar Isaac, just beautiful and doe-eyed, being a really good Laurie. But I just kind of keep going back to the dad, the Bob Odenkirk role.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, I love Oscar Isaac. I want him to do all sorts of wacky shit forever. Please do a musical. Please, Oscar Isaac, for the love of God, do a musical. And I'm not talking Inside Llewyn Davis, which is great, by the way, and it's a wonderful film. Or Sucker Punch. That was the Zack Snyder one I was thinking of. Like, do a fucking musical, my dude. Please. But in this film, he probably could have just been, like, the dad. You know, gone into his Donald Sutherland, like, happy dad era and just had everybody fawn over him, so... And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Little Women. And man, we hope you enjoyed this wild ride as much as we enjoyed making it for you. This movie garnered a lot of emotions, a lot of solid truths. This was a fun conversation. I'm really glad we got to do this. This is the last official episode of Movie Mingle for 2024. So we would just like to say thank you so much for joining us on this ride that we've been on for the better part of the year. You know, last year at this time, we didn't even have any idea what we were going to do with that computer in the corner, let alone that it would become this silly, wonderful little podcast. So thank you so much. We've got a lot of great and exciting things coming out in 2025, and we can only hope that this little podcast of ours grows and, you know, maybe gets us a sponsorship one day. That would be cool. Native deodorant, I like you guys. I use you all the time. Hit us up. Thank you for being a part of this ride. Coming up next week, on January 1st, the first day of 2025, we will be dropping our full-length movie commentary for Avengers Endgame. We opted to do this movie this way because we felt that it would be fun for fans to listen to us, you know, to really be a part of what it's like to watch a movie with us, especially a movie that makes me cry this hard, but also that I love that much. It's a good time, folks. So we really hope that you enjoy it. It is a long one. It is meant to be watched with the film. But yeah, it's a good time no matter what. You can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. And write us at moviemingle@gmail.com with all your thoughts and questions and concerns and comments and wants and needs and lists to Santa. You can find that email address in the description of this episode, so it's really easy to just click on it and send us some love. Please feel free to rate us, review us, tell your friends about us, get the word out, because it's a silly little thing, but it's made with love. And as I'm pretty sure that is everything for this week, we just want to say that until next week, go forth. Hug your sisters and go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.